Seat 1A, driven into Albert Park along the Melbourne Walk like you own the place. The McLaren Hospitality Suite, none of it paid for with cash. Chris Chamberlain is a freelance travel journalist and frequent flyer points expert whose work appears in the Australian Financial Review, Business Traveller and Traveller. And in this episode, he explains exactly how to play the points game well enough to make travel and race weekends feel like they're almost free. Strap in, this is a great episode. Welcome back to Away We Go Podcast. Welcome back to Away We Go Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm your host, Diane Bortoletto, and today I'm in Margaret River. And travellers, you are going to love this episode. Get a pen and paper out because I'm here with points expert Chris Chamberlain. Chris Chamberlain is a freelance travel journalist and frequent flyer points coach and expert. And he helps travellers defeat competition by landing in pole position, and that is seat A1 on any flight. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
The world of points. I mean, you know, we've all got frequent flyer accounts and, you know, we watch our points trickle up. And I know there's lots of different strategies of how you can boost points. And actually, I did one several years ago where I took out an Amex business card and got a big bonus of 150,000 points after I spent about, $600,000. That wasn't quite that much, but there was a minimum.
Wow, I didn't realize you were at that level. All right. You do have to spend thousands to get those bonus points when you sign up.
We had a few expenses coming up, so it was kind of like, well, let's put it all on the credit card and may as well get these points while I'm at it. Tell us a little bit about your journey to become a frequent flyer point expert. Like, how did that happen?
It's a bit of a niche, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a title niche.
So my job through uni and as I finished high school was hospitality at Brisbane Airport. So I was like working in cafes and things, and I was at the front counter, and you know, you're taking orders from people, and it's back in the day before they have tap and pay and people using their phones and things. People actually had to hand you a physical credit card. I might be showing my age a little bit here, but they'd be handing over all these cards that are gold, platinum, they've got frequent flyer logos and things on the front. And I'm thinking, we don't charge a surcharge to be processing these payments for these customers. So they're kind of earning these points for free. How can I get in on that bandwagon and start earning points on money that I'm already spending? And so because I started that job when I was 17, it gave me time to become familiar with that. It gave me time to research. And then literally on my 18th birthday, I applied for my first credit card, and it's all gone uphill from there.
So you really have turned your points fascination as a 17-year-old working, you know, in hospitality at an airport into a full-time gig. And I can imagine how much research every single day. Because I just saw on LinkedIn the other day that Qantas has brought out a tool for making it easier to find reward flights. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it's always a struggle to find. It's generally if you want business class, first class on a long-haul flight. That's always the challenge. If you're happy to do economy on a domestic route, it's pretty easy. But finding those flatbeds, finding those suites is very difficult. So they've made it a bit easier to put basically where you want to fly from and where you want to go to, or you can actually press anywhere. And so if you just want to say, I live in Melbourne, I want to fly first class and I want to take my partner, so I want two seats, it can help uncover where you can go over the next year. And it's a good thing that helps people find those seats. It may also be a bad thing because it will show how few are actually available. I was looking at Emirates first class, like assuming that, you know, things get back to normal later this year and people can fly easily again from Australia to Dubai. There's a collection of first class suites for a couple of months, and then there's nothing for a couple of months, and then like one pops up in October and then, you know, later in the year. So it's one of those things where you've got to plan ahead, or you've got to be flexible, or just jump when you have the opportunity. So my attitude is, if there is first class available and I have the points, I take it, because you can't do it on most flights these days. It's not on most of the airlines and things. It's kind of rare for me. I get on a plane and there is actually a first class option. So I did it in January from Dubai to Kuwait, which was on Emirates first class for the same number of points as Qantas business class from Brisbane to Melbourne. But you've got the full suite, you've got Dom Perignon, you've got like the Emirates Dubai first class experience. So the airport has like a private entrance, you've got separate security. There's the first class lounge with the full restaurant and everything before you get on the plane. And yeah, I'd much rather, for that, it was 29,000 Qantas points. So for that number of points, I would much rather sit at the front in Emirates first class than just on like a little reclining seat on a domestic flight.
Like those flights within the Middle East too are not always cheap, because I was looking for a route to get from Perth into Europe several months ago, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I can land in Oman and then fly out of, you know, and getting those connecting, those flights within the Middle East, I was like, flights $1,200, like just, when there's two of us, there's $2,500 on a domestic 2.5 hour flight or something. I was like, that's not going to work. 29,000 points, that sounds like an absolute bargain. And does Emirates send a car to come pick you up if it's first class?
So when you've used points, you do not get the car. That's the trade-off. Okay. You used to. So I used points to fly, I think it was Melbourne, Singapore in first class years ago, and you did get the chauffeur, and it was only a few hundred dollars. So Emirates on this flight, it was about $400 in taxes, fees, and charges. So you basically get everything except the car. But the retail flight, I think this was $3,000 or $4,000 one way. So I paid $400 instead of $4,000, and I just have to get myself to the airport. So I actually had a hire car anyway, so it was convenient for me just to drop it off at the terminal and walk across. But look, the cost of an Uber or something on top of a points ticket is still a massive saving. And you get everything else. They were very liberal with the Dom Perignon, and they'd snuck an $1,100 bottle onto the plane. They just do this from time to time on various flights. So the menu says it's like the regular Dom, which is $400 or so a bottle. And then, you know, they had the Dom Perignon P2 come out, which is the black label fancy stuff, and it was a bit of a delay taking off, so I might have got through a couple of glasses at the gate. So I've already got my money's worth, and then might have had a couple more glasses on the flight. And you don't waste champagne like that. So the crew were very, very helpful. They snuck it into it. They have, like, you know, those paper takeaway coffee cups that look very innocent, but they had filled it up with what was left of the bottle before we landed, so that I didn't have to go without champagne until we got to the gate. So that was very nice of them, and that was all using Qantas points. And yeah, that was so much fun.
Oh, that sounds so much fun. I remember seeing your posts on social media about that. Yeah, just thinking, oh my God, you really do live the life. But, you know, you've worked hard and you've done all the research, and, you know, all those years of figuring out how it all works is paying dividends now. And you're sharing your knowledge with anybody else that's keen to learn with your consulting service. People like me that keep looking for reward seats and get extremely frustrated because I'm being like, oh, 2 hours have passed and I still haven't even got us to Europe yet, you know, because you have to, you know, fly from Perth to maybe Singapore, or, oh, maybe I can go via China, or maybe Japan, or maybe Thailand, or maybe Kuala Lumpur, or what, you know, a million different ways trying to connect all of those flights. Oh man, it takes forever, but you know, you're helping people do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that hassle you've described is exactly what I hear from people. It's so hard to find a seat. So look, even though Qantas has this new tool, it's not going to uncover all of the, you know, the complicated routings, the things that you really need an expert to help find. So as you mentioned, there are so many ways you can get to Europe, and websites like Qantas's website are just going to pull the most obvious options. So their software is going to say, okay, can I get you through Dubai on Emirates? Can I maybe get you through Hong Kong or something on Cathay? But so many of my trips come from splitting the flights up and booking them with different types of points as well. So when you've got maybe some Qantas points and some Velocity points, or if you've got a credit card that has some flexible points and you can choose which airline and things that those go to, that's where that really can help pay off. So the trip we're discussing with the Emirates flight in the middle, I booked with a combination for the rest of the journey. I used some Alaska miles that I had transferred to Hawaiian from American Express. Like, you've got to really know all the partnerships. That was to get a double bed on Qatar from Melbourne to Doha, and that was very comfy. I used Qatar points, or they call them Avios, to get from Doha to Jeddah. I then used Air France Flying Blue miles to get from Jeddah to Riyadh for New Year, and then Riyadh to Abu Dhabi on Saudi Arabian Airlines, and then drove to Dubai, and then for that, took that flight to Kuwait, and then, yeah, used Qatar Avios again to do Kuwait, Doha, Melbourne. And then I got the Q suite again on the way home. So it's very complicated. So, like, if I only had Qantas points, that whole itinerary, I would have just been able to book that Emirates flight in the middle. Because, I mean, Qatar and Qantas are partners, but they don't release many seats between each other because, you know, Qatar is more aligned with Virgin Australia. So there are some opportunities to spend points, but not in the way that I had booked.
No.
And it's every holiday is like that. So I have to piece everything together. I think my last trip to Europe was, I think, 5 or 6 frequent flyer programs all paired together to book different flights. Because, of course, I want to travel at the most peak time. So in 2 years in a row, I've flown overseas on Boxing Day. So I'm not going to, this isn't, you know, flying in the middle of the year. I want to go somewhere fun for New Year. So it's worth the hunt. It's very time consuming. And that's what I help people to do when they have points. They know where they want to go and they just don't know how to do it, or they just don't have the time to sit there hunting and finding those flights.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put a link to your website, your Calendly booking.
Yeah, that thing.
Where people can book to book a time with you to talk about, yeah, how they can maximize their points. But I guess before they get to that point, you know, you've got to accrue the points, right? So what are some, besides credit card bonuses, sign-up bonuses that we briefly touched on, what are some other great ways for travelers to really boost their points balance?
So many hotels and airlines have points partnerships between them. So one that I personally like using is Accor Live Limitless, which is the loyalty program of hotels like Mercure, Pullman, Sofitel, that sort of thing. Their loyalty program, you can link with Qantas Frequent Flyer. So some people might book a hotel through Qantas to earn points. Some people might book directly with the hotel if they want points and status. But when you have the accounts linked together like this, you don't have to choose one or the other. You book direct with Accor, but I can earn 3 Qantas points per dollar on my hotels in Asia Pacific on top of all the rewards that come with Accor's program. So on one night's stay, I'm earning points towards a future stay and I'm earning frequent flyer points towards a future flight. So being able to link things like that together is very handy. You can also do things like linking Didi with Velocity frequent flyer. So those ride shares to and from the airport or anywhere else around Australia you might be headed can be earning you frequent flyer points. You can even earn points online shopping. So if you're just doing a bit of a shop with Myer, David Jones, you can click through your airline's website. They have a big portal full of partners and it tracks your session. It tracks how much you spend and it gives you rewards on that. And of course, there's the simple partnerships like those with the supermarkets where you can transfer, you know, like Woolworths points to Qantas, Flybys and things to Virgin Australia. So there's, when you add them all together and you're doing it all year and you think anytime that you spend money, you think, how can this earn me points? They can really add up quite quickly over time, even if you're not spending that much. I think it's very achievable for anyone to get a free flight every year using points without going out of their way to do it.
Yeah, and I think BP, have they still got a deal with Qantas
BP's
as well?
BP's got Qantas, yeah. So you earn 1 point per, I think it's 1 point per litre off the top of my head. So, I mean, unfortunately, that you're spending a lot more money these days and not getting more points from it. I mean, you can earn some from the credit card, I guess, but anything's better than nothing. But yeah, there's so many fuel partnerships like 7-Eleven with Velocity as well. They give points and those petrol stations attached to, you know, everyday rewards and flybys as well are ways of getting extra points into your frequent flyer program. I like the one that Shell has where if you spend $30 at Coles, you get a fuel voucher. In the app, you go to activate it and you choose whether you want a 4 cent saving, which is almost nothing, or you choose if you want an 8 bonus points per litre. So I had a hire car the other day. I had to fill up. I earned 240 bonus points on top of the normal points, on top of the, you know, credit card points and everything. And the saving I would have had was otherwise, like a dollar or two or something? You know,
the
points are worth more when you use them well. So I'm happy to take the points and they can keep their 4 cents.
That's a good tip, And, like, are there any programs... Yeah, like we are in Australia, but we've got listeners from all over the world. Like, are there any programs that are particularly generous or any airlines that are like particularly good value or really well connected that you'd say, if you're just starting out, this is where I would direct my efforts?
Yeah. So from a global perspective, Singapore Airlines is very good because they actually have reward seats quite frequently, which is something you don't see in some of the Australian programs. You know, you've got to hunt, you've got to find, whereas Singapore Airlines, I've seen on some of their routes, they can have 4 business class seats available on routes like Singapore to London, which is insane. When you think about what the other programs have, they might have 4 seats a month. So if you're able to earn Singapore miles or you're able to convert them from credit cards and hotel programs, that's definitely one that I would focus on. I think Qatar Airways Privilege Club as well is particularly good because they don't charge a lot of Avios for flights. I think they recognize that their program doesn't have the degree of partnerships that, you know, that we might have in Australia. So those points can be harder to earn, but by extension, you need fewer of them when you go to travel. So if you've got a credit card, a hotel program or something that you can convert points into Qatar, then you're already winning. So you can do, between Europe and Australia, you can do business class for only 90,000 points through Qatar, full Q suite.
Wow.
So if you think Qantas, I think, charges nearly 90,000 points just to get Australia to Singapore in business class. These days. So it's incredible value. It's just, again, the points are hard to earn. That's the tricky part.
That's the trade-off, And Qatar's also a beautiful airline to fly and one of my favourite airports that, you know, I've been to. Singapore's a great airport, but I just love that middle garden bit at Doha Airport. It's just so calm and serene. And with Singapore, you've got
the orchard thing. Yes.
Yes, but you need to go out of customs And then
it's
go
outside
back.
Immigration.
Yeah. So if you've only got 3 or 4 hours, it's sometimes not worth doing that. And as a result, I've never actually been in that part of the airport at Singapore because when I've been in transit, I've only had a few hours before someone I'm meeting, like my mom or my sister, is landing in Singapore, or just not had the time in between flights. I wanted to ask, with the CAWS program, is that like, does it cost to sign up to these programs, like the hotel programs?
Yeah, so Accor has two programs. Their main program is Accor Live Limitless, and that program is free. And that's what you need to start earning points. Well, that's what you need to be using to start earning points at hotels. And it's that program that can be linked with Qantas Frequent Flyer, which can also be free to join. You just have to search, you know, there's links online how to join for free. They try and charge you a fee otherwise. But no, you don't need to spend any money to be doing that. They have a separate paid program that gives you, you know, like discounts on hotels and status upgrades and things that does cost money. But no, that's separate to this. So yeah, zero fee to start doing this. If you're staying in a hotel anyway, you may as well be earning as many points as you can. That's my philosophy, especially when there's no charge attached.
Definitely, 100%. Yeah, I'm not a member of any hotel reward points. I am a member of a bunch of different airline rewards. And my credit card was CommBank, just general awards, but they've changed that now. So now that earns, I think, Velocity points. But
they had so many great partners, they got rid of all of them except Velocity. You could transfer to Qatar, actually, from CommBank and some other amazing programs like Air France, Flying Blue for SkyTeam. But yeah, so that one's just Velocity now.
Yeah,
you can still do some cool things with those points, though.
Yeah, and Velocity, you know, they've got a good partnership with Qatar, like you said. So that's, you know, flying from Australia to Europe. If I'm not going through Singapore and Singapore Airlines, yeah, flying Qatar would be my top choice. Emirates is also a very good airline, but I just find Dubai Airport hectic. And, you know, if you don't have lounge access, then it's, yeah, you just want to find a little corner and just hide away from the chaos.
The coffee is so expensive too. I was just like running between flights one day. I'm like, I need coffee, and it's like $12 for a latte. I'm like, oh my gosh, I should have waited for the plane.
I think I bought like 3 dates or something from, you know, they have all these specialty dates that are covered in pistachios and whatnot there at Dubai Airport. I think I bought 3 of them. It was $24.
Oh, wow. Okay. They saw you coming with that one.
Totally. 100%. So spending points, obviously redeeming flights when we can find flights, upgrading, I guess. Do you recommend people upgrade if they've booked a domestic flight or
international flight, if that was
similar. No, yeah, but what's the bottom tier? Like, it's not business.
Oh, like if you've booked economy, that cabin you're struggling to find the name of. All right, you are more spoiled than I thought here. Okay, what's that? Where do all those people sit who are not me? I don't know. No. Yeah, so behind the curtain. No, see, these days I prefer just booking the flight that I want on points, because upgrades are always a gamble. You're hoping that the airline is going to let you do it. A lot of the airlines make you wait list, which is where you tell them you want the upgrade. You've got to, you know, have the points in your account. But they make you sweat it out until sometimes the day before departure, sometimes even the boarding gate. You might get a buzz or you might not. So it's not until you're on the aerobridge that you find out whether or not you're going to have a comfortable flight, or whether you're going to be sandwiched down the back in a middle seat if that's what you're original seat was or something. So I much prefer booking the flight I want using points, and I put that effort in up front to find what I can secure, lock my seat in, know that I'm going to have a comfortable flight, and just relax. Like, I have upgraded before, and it's an option if you're stuck flying economy. So this can be a good option for people traveling for work where they have to buy economy under their company travel policies, or maybe if you're flying with a family and you're all, you know, buying flights, you don't have enough points to shout 5 people an experience at the same time. But yeah, if it's just me traveling, definitely trying to book the seat I want from the time that I want it. And, you know, I actually don't mind flying economy as well. I might regret saying that something in future if people look at me, but it's like, I don't mind economy on a shorter flight.
Yes, so, you need to put that qualifier
so
in.
So yes, on a shorter flight. So domestic economy is fine. I rarely use my points for business class now on domestic flights. Like if I can get the extra legroom, the exit row or something, and even if it's a flight between Perth and the East Coast, there's enough room to work and that sort of thing, because I'd rather save those points to do, you know, the flatbed flights on long haul. So,
totally.
You know, on my trip, my Kuwait to Doha was economy because it was a tiny number of points on a short flight, no problem. But yeah, the Doha to Australia, that's where I splurged my points on the flatbed.
Oh, totally. Like, I remember I upgraded, got a Qantas upgrade from Brisbane to Perth, which is a decent, it's a 5-hour flight, decent
One of the longest domestic flights in Australia. So if you're going to do it, that's
every time I do upgrade because I fly across Australia. That's where my family is a little bit. So I look for reward seats first. If I can't find them, then I just book domestic and then hope for an upgrade. Mm. I put in for an upgrade. I got it this time. I was like, yes, brilliant. Mm. And then they changed the plane because I always check what plane it is as well, because the 747s, I think it's a 747, their business is like awful. Awful.
The 737s, the single aisle, the two little reclining seats. Yeah.
It's just literally a reclining seat. It's not, you know, you don't get a flat bed. You don't get your own little kind of cubicle thing. And I was so cranky. I actually wrote an email to Qantas going, when I got this, you know, it was for the A380 and then you've checked, well, A330, I can't remember which one.
But A330, then for the domestic,
And then they changed the flight, changed the plane rather, and I was gutted. What a waste of points. Yeah. Anyway. Speaking of points, now, race fans, pay attention to this because you can spend your points for Grand Prix experiences. This is news to me, so I'm all ears. Tell us everything, Chris. How can we use points and get top-tier experiences at the Australian Grand Prix?
The same as with frequent flyer points when you're trying to get those seats. It's all about leveraging partnerships. So Hilton has their own points program, which is Hilton Honors, and Hilton in turn sponsors McLaren. So they have a bit of a deal where you can bid your Hilton points. This was happening recently for the Melbourne Grand Prix. You can bid your Hilton points to get it included a stay at Hilton Melbourne, Little Queen Street. And it included, it was called the Paddock Club last year. They called it the Podium Club this year. But you get into the Podium Club area of the Grand Prix. You get into the McLaren suite. We were meant to do a pit lane walk, which they had to cancel because they were running a bit behind. So to compensate, they just took us into the team garage. After qualifying. So it was, you know, we're just wandering around the lounge. Oh, here's Delta Goodrum. Okay, let's have a photo. Like this is insane. You are in this private suite right above the pit lane, right above the team garage. You can look down, you can see them coming in. You're looking over at all the other people in the grandstand in the hot and in the sun. You're in the cool, in the air conditioning, drinking champagne. You can go up to the roof if you want a better view. You can walk around, and we even got out the back into the paddock as well for a bit of a wander. So that was
fun. So you bid your Hilton points to get that you were probably invited, were you?
Like, I was hosted. Yeah, I was invited by Hilton to show what was actually possible for people with points. So they'd sent these points to auction. And for this experience, it got to 660,000 Hilton Honors points for two people. So you consider it's about 330,000 points each. And for context, like it's a two-night stay at the hotel, which on a normal night costs almost 50,000 points. So, you know, 100,000 points of that you'd spend on accommodation anyway. And during the F1, rates are a fair bit higher. Points rates are going to be a fair bit higher. So probably even more of that. You can actually buy Hilton Honors points, though. So this is where it gets exciting. You can't buy 600,000 in one go, but you can buy about 400,000 under the offer that they're running at the moment, because they often do bonus points deals. So you can buy that. I think it was for a few thousand US dollars. So if you were to do this over a couple of years, you're lucky enough to win with that sort of bid, and you can go with two people. You're probably going to end up paying maybe about $3,000 each, which is kind of competitive given that a lot of those Paddock Club tickets can cost $4,000 or so just for the normal hospitality
suite.
Not to be with Team McLaren. Yeah, I was there on the Saturday. So this was, you know, they get more and more expensive as you get closer to race day. But I think it's actually better to be there on qualifying day because you can spend more time enjoying the hospitality. You're not sort of glued to the screens. You're not, you know, just stuck, head out the window, really focused on the race. You can see what's happening. I mean, F1's one of those sports where you see most of what happens on the screen anyway, even if you're there. You know, the best place to be is, you know, at the starting line, at the finish line, or maybe on the chicane. But yeah, you know, we're there above the pit. You can see all the action, but you can also enjoy it without that feeling of being dragged away from it. You've got to choose one thing or another. So it was a really, really chill day. We got access to, you go through firstly the American Express Lounge at the Grand Prix. So you take the Melbourne Walk firstly. Actually, I should just go back to the beginning because I'm skipping over the most VIP part, which is they drive you into the Grand Prix. So you don't have to get out and walk. You go through the little road, they open the security fence. It's about a 10-minute drive from the gate. If you've been inside Albert Park, you see they'll often close the roads and things for cars coming through. So I'm sorry to say we were in one of those cars. So thank you for everyone who stopped right in the middle of the big walkway to let us through. But they drive you straight into the Grand Prix. They drop you off at the entrance to the, you know, to Melbourne Walk. So you follow the track and everyone's looking to see who it is. And it's like, no, there's no one important. But, you know, everyone's got their cameras ready. They're excited. They think maybe a driver's coming out. But yeah, so we sneak in. You go firstly into the American Express Lounge. So that's where we ran into Delta. We just ended up getting our selfies and our champagne, just hanging out. They've got like a Penfold stand. They've got photo walls. They've got, you know, they've got to keep a lot of people busy, right? So we wander through there. We go up to the Paddock Club and then into the McLaren suite, where, of course, they're going to fit you out with all the team gear to take home with you. They've got talks from... Sometimes they have the drivers come in. Unfortunately, we didn't see Oscar or Lando that day. They were, you know, kind of busy racing, you know, doing their job. But got to see Oscar actually drive, which was something that people there on Sunday didn't really get to see much of. But that was an experience. But yeah, no, it's a big room, and you've got the screens of what's happening. You've got access to commentary, and yeah, they can take you down into the paddock. They can take you into the team garage, and you know, that's where they say turn your cameras off, because they're dismantling the cars, so you actually see them all being pulled apart. They've got the FIA scrutineers and things in there while they're doing it to store them overnight. And because of all of the challenges they'd had in getting, you know, all the logistics into Melbourne, given the airspace closures that were happening in the Middle East, the FIA had given them dispensation to stay overnight to work on the cars and get things ready. So we're able to go in there where they had everything sort of pulled apart from the car. It was, I've never seen that anywhere else, unless when someone crashes and all the bits are all across the track. So it's nice to see. It's nice to see the car pulled apart without, you know, mayhem and chaos and people injured and that sort of thing. So, yeah. And then, you know, you go outside, and if you can do the pit lane walk, you can get your selfie under the time clock that comes out of the pit. So because they had to change the schedule around that day, we just did that from the edge of the garage, which is totally fine. Like, compared to the grandstand or the main field, it is such an amazing experience. And I was there 2 days before. I just went myself, and I was just doing the, you know, the standard experience that normal people have. So I had to walk in, you know, like a person and everything else. And yeah, it's such a different experience from, you know, finding your own way to the grandstand, standing in line in the heat, paying $1,000 for a cup of coffee, you know, these sort of things. Like, there's, and the bar is open all day.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's insane. It was amazing. Yeah. So if I'd spent my points, I would have been very happy still.
Yeah, totally. Like last year, thanks to Belle Jackson, I was her plus one. She got invited to the Red Bull Energy Station, which is at, you were right over the pits. This was at the end of the pit lane. And yeah. I asked some people in there, like, how much did you pay? And this was on qualifying day. And they said race day tickets were $7,000 a person. So to spend 300,000 points, Hilton points, sounds like pretty good value to me. Like, and you get your 2-night stay and, you know, driven in, you don't know, we didn't get driven into the track on the Melbourne walk. I mean, that's totally Hollywood.
Yeah. You got to have sunglasses on for that one, you know, just try and hide from all the cameras and the people. But yeah.
And just pretend you're somebody famous.
If you stay a lot with them, they've got a new, because their loyalty program has levels, like a frequent flyer program. So they always had the blue tier, which is entry. You go silver, gold, diamond. And they've recently launched Diamond Reserve, which is for the people that clearly travel and stay far too often. And I'm told that a handful of Diamond Reserve members also got complimentary access just on the basis of how much they travel. So sometimes you don't even have to spend your points if you're, you know, clearly people spending the kind of money that they are on travel. If you're doing that with one of the F1 sponsors, you might be lucky enough that they invite you. I hear Qatar Airways does that as well for some of their platinum frequent flyers who live in Melbourne or who are going to be in Melbourne. So that's another way to get in, possibly, if you don't have points. But for most people, you're going to have to be bidding those points, and the competition is fierce for that. The bid just keeps going up and up and up until they lock it off.
Wow. I mean, how fantastic. And if you can afford to spend the money on hospitality, I would say that it's still worth it. It is an incredible experience. Last year, I was just pinching myself the whole time going, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm here. Like, I just can't believe. And then I was looking at people in the grandstand and I felt like, you know, yeah. I don't know, like a VIP, and yeah, it was so nice. And you're right that, you know, the Moet was flowing, we're drinking champagne, we're eating oysters. Yeah, it was really wonderful. And the funny thing is that a lot of people around me had no idea what was going on. Like, no idea what was going on. I met a couple of guys from Western Australia, actually, who were from IGA. They'd won a competition through Red Bull for a display in their IGA store. Like, they had the best display. And they won a flight to Melbourne and, you know, tickets there. They had no idea about the Grand Prix. And other people who were, you know, I guess influencers, didn't really know what was going on. But when you explain and when you've experienced how awesome it is, of course, if you're invited, you're going to say yes, whether you know the sport or don't know the sport. You know, there's a lot of chatter at the moment going on out there online that, you know, all these influencers and people that aren't involved in the sport, not even fans, getting invited to things like the Australian Open and the Australian Grand Prix, and people calling it sort of a bit ridiculous. But yeah, if I'm invited to anything fancy, I'm going to say yes, for sure. Like, and at the end of the day, you know, all those partners that are involved in the Grand Prix in Formula One that are promoting their brand, I mean, they want to widen their audience, right? So this is how you do it.
It's also about networking. So it's not totally. It's not always just about watching the race. It's about who's also in the room with you. So I happened to be in the room, and the CEO of the Qantas loyalty program, you know, Qantas Frequent Flyer, was in the same room. So for someone like me who writes about airlines and points, having an ear with someone like that while we just happen to be watching a race is very helpful. So he wasn't with our group. He was there with someone else or on his own. But there are so many people in the room that maybe you want to talk to. And it is one of those good sort of business networking opportunities as well. Maybe that's an excuse some people need to, you know, claim a tax deduction or something like that. You know, a meeting room at the F1.
Definitely. I think we might have to organize a next meeting at...
It's like, oh, our board meeting, it had to be in the Paddock Club. It was the only facility available on that day. It was very busy in Melbourne. I tell you what,
Okay, jet base. What's the jet base?
So Melbourne has a private airport terminal, which I did not realize until I got to see it last week. And I'm told it was very busy during the F1. So like, because all the normal passengers go to where all the, you know, airlines take off. If you have a private jet, there's a different terminal on the other side of the airport. So it's where Taylor Swift flies through. It's where all the, you know, most of the F1 stars that have private planes. So it's got a secluded entrance. It has a private little customs room. It's a multi-story building. There's, you know, hotel rooms inside, restaurant, lounge space. It's this incredible facility. And you just walk, you come straight in, and, you know, it's this private, you're never going to see anyone else. They can put curtains up. They can sneak you onto your aircraft, and, you know, you just board your secluded plane in the closed off hangar, and then you slide out and take off. So it's hidden down next to Jetstar's maintenance facility. So down in no man's land where most people are not going to go, it's incredible. And it opened just before COVID. So I hadn't seen that it was, you know, existing.
Right.
Until now. So it's, yeah, it's insane. Don't ask me what it costs. It would be, you know, incredible, because they do all the servicing for your aircraft. You know, they can clean it, they'll cater it, they'll do everything else while you're sitting there enjoying yourself. So yeah,
guessing a lot of drivers and team principals and that, like those, you know, senior people in Formula One who were flying with their private jets, that's where they'd go, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's where the private jets would take off from Melbourne Airport. And I mean, when you've got a lot of gear, if you're taking cargo on your jet, depending on the size and capacity, you know, it can make sense for the people like that to fly private. Or when you really have to race from one place to another and you don't want to leave your fate to the commercial airlines and things like that. For those sort of people, that facility gets them where they need to be and makes the rest of us incredibly jealous and envious looking on at the level of luxury and seclusion and things that can happen. It's like the Paddock Club of the airport, really, this private terminal. So
amazing. Now, I'm guessing a lot of people are going to be thinking this. What's the best airline to fly, in your opinion?
So I fly so much that I just want to get there. So some people go out of their way to fly one airline over another, and, you know, they might have to fly through somewhere to get on it rather than taking a direct flight. I just want to get there. I don't want to spend 5 hours on something that can take two. I don't want to spend all day when I could be there in 8 hours direct. So I generally book my choice of airline by where I can get to on points. So I've had some good success with Qatar, with Emirates, with Singapore Airlines. I do fly a lot with Qantas, especially domestically, to the point where I manage to keep platinum every year, and they have an unwritten benefit where if you want to fly somewhere on points and you can't find a seat, you can call them and they will consider making one for you. So that's, for me, a game changer. So I can call up and be like, could I get business class to London in July, you know, on this date? And even though the website says no, or the website says something ridiculous like 1 million points, and they'll put it through and they're like, yeah, okay, we can do that. So I also don't mind that. But if I didn't have access to that benefit, my Qantas points definitely would be a lot harder to use.
Oh my God, I didn't even know that was a thing. Oh, wow, platinum. Like, I have never moved off bronze, I've got to say, on status.
See, that you can earn status when you spend points. That's the thing. But they might be getting rid of that later this year. They're considering it. They haven't decided whether or not they're going to keep it. But once you earn 150,000 of their points a year, you get Points Club. And so then once you spend your Qantas points on Qantas flights, you earn status when you travel, which is not like most reward seats where you just earn nothing. So that's probably helps me keep most of my platinum in check every year just by spending my points. And then, of course, when you are platinum and you have that ability to call and get them to give you the seats that you want anyway, and then earn status on the flights that you've called and unlocked, then it becomes a lot easier to stay in the club. The hard part is getting in the club to begin with. And once you're there, you'll do almost anything with the airline just to try and stay there, because it's just, it makes travel so much easier than, you know, even trying to experience the same as someone who's even silver or gold. It's
gosh, I feel like such fantastic. An underachiever. Yeah, it's anyway. Wow.
There are so many tips and tricks.
So many. My God, it's no wonder, you know, you've got a business as a consultant, because there's so much to it that, you know, yeah, I can really see where the value would be in engaging someone like yourself to just help navigate the minefield of the points world. Well, have you got any last tips before we move into the final three for listeners who might want to maximize their points?
Who might want to maximize, exactly. So I think for every dollar I spend, I'm always trying to earn points. So I just don't use cash unless I absolutely have to. Maybe if I'm overseas and I have to use it for something, okay, fine. But I don't carry cash. Everything is a points earning credit card, because every dollar you spend can be points. And in my head, I mean, I'm so used to doing it, I don't even think anymore. But if I'm at the supermarket, I'm scanning my points loyalty card. If I'm shopping online, I'm clicking through the website. If I'm booking a hotel, I'm making sure my loyalty number is attached. You can earn so many points, and even more if you're running a business as well, because they have credit cards and things for businesses and loyalty programs for businesses. So you can actually earn points as a company or as an entity and then use them to save on your employee travel as well. So there are so many opportunities with points. I mean, I flew first class for the first time when I was 24, still working in, I had actually just left hospitality only a couple of months prior. My role was made redundant. I was still, you know, getting back on my feet, and here I am flying first class because I have points and because I knew how to work the game. So I'm like, okay, this is a good life. I just have to work out how to do this more often.
Yeah.
That once you've got the points automatically flowing in, it gets a lot easier. And if you've got a partner and you have a points earning credit card, maybe, you know, see if you would consider, not financial advice, of course, but there are ways you can add that partner to your credit card to have, you know, an additional card holder, because you can then earn points on your entire household spend, not just what you're spending. So any opportunity to earn more points, that is my goal. Earn, and then when it comes time to fly, you'll hopefully be able to turn them into something magical.
Or bid for a Grand Prix experience, or use points to fly to your next Grand Prix, or book a hotel for your next race day.
I thought that would be quite magical. I would include that under my magical banner. Yeah. But
look, anything for free. Well, it's not free because you've been spending money, but money you would have spent on living anyway. But anything for free is magical in my book. So, all right, Chris, shall we move into the final three? Are you ready?
Let's do it.
So, Chris, if you could go to any Formula One destination for a holiday, no racing, just a holiday, where would you choose to go to and why?
You know, actually, I just did this, and that was going to Jeddah, because I was there in December, where the weather is not horrible. It's quite pleasant. I only had about a day and a half there. It was kind of unfortunate. So I definitely need to go back, also when it's off-peak season, so the hotels don't cost an arm and a leg. But it was just such a beautiful place to fly into. Went out to the Red Sea for a day, took a boat out on the water, and went snorkeling. It's the most blue water. It was incredible. And it was just so much calmer than when I was in Riyadh on the same trip. Riyadh's got a lot of traffic, a lot of people, a lot of big buildings. Jeddah still has that historic feel. It doesn't feel over-touristed. And yeah, if you're not there during like the Hajj pilgrimages, when it is busy, especially around Mecca, if you're just there throughout the regular year, it's just calm. It was a beautiful destination, wonderful food, lovely people. And yeah, I can't wait to go back there when it's safe to do so. That was definitely a highlight. So that'll definitely be the next place I go again once we can, I think.
So sounds like to me that the Middle East is a place that keeps drawing you back. Would that be fair to say?
That is fair to say. My partner is Arabic, so that also is a big influence on that as well, which is very handy when we travel, because she can speak and understand and know what's going on even, you know. But I mean, they're pretty good with English over there as well. But it's a region that I'd only until recently, you know, flown through Doha and maybe spent a couple of days. I'd only been to Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And so I've been to the three big aviation hubs and explored those cities, but I hadn't gone further. So going to Saudi, you know, driving through the UAE, going to Kuwait as well on the same trip was phenomenal. Yes. If I can mix travel and F1 and business class on points, that's one of those dream trips we were just talking about.
The Middle East is a culture that's always fascinated me. For, you know, I'm just drawn to movies and shows about it. I love Middle Eastern food. Probably my second favorite cuisine after Italian. But I've hardly explored that area as well. You know, more things to look forward to. All right, Chris. Question number two. Chris, if you could go to any Formula One race on the current calendar or a previous calendar, which race would you go to watch Formula One and why?
I go to Melbourne as best I can, purely because I live in Melbourne. It's so convenient. But for travel, I would love to go to Shanghai, especially if I can wing my way, you know, into the Paddock Club experience. I saw this incredible video on YouTube that showed what they have there. And they have this glass bridge over the track that they don't have in any other city. So rather than that side-on view where you see them just race past and you've already missed it and you're back to your screen and, you know, and you're back to your champagne, you could be standing there looking over the track, seeing them actually drive under you and get a better view of where they're going and feel probably like it's more part of it. So I would really be keen to have that view. If it's really hot and they've got, you know, air conditioning and things, so you're behind glass, but there's also outdoor terraces and things where you can lean forward, feel, you know, a bit more connected to the experience. It just looked so much fun. You know, Melbourne is great, but yeah. I think Shanghai being over the track, because I mean, Melbourne has those walking bridges, so you can walk over the track, but you can't see anything because they want people to keep moving. So they're deliberately boarded up so that you don't get any hangers on. But being able to actually just stand there and see it, I think, would be incredible.
Yeah, and those bridges over the track in Melbourne, you just want to get out of it as quick as possible because it's usually so hot and stuffy and crowded and you do not want to be hanging around there. But yeah, you're right. They board it all up so you can hear, but you can't see anything there. In a recent episode, we had Riley Sullivan, who's a Formula One journalist based in China, come on, and he was at the Shanghai Media Center, and he was explaining that the two big sort of Heineken signs you see over the track there, one of them is the media center, and that's over the track. And he said that's the only. Yeah. And so he said normally, exactly, the media center's like kind of above the Paddock Club in that stretch there. So you're looking down like you've explained. He said it was over the track and he said that was really cool. And he said, and the other one was hospitality, which you've just talked about. Yeah. Shanghai, and he said Shanghai was also a really good value race to attend. And I've heard that from several sources, you know, good value as far as transport, hotels, just food, cost of living, and cost of race tickets as well. So that's one for race fans to perhaps consider next year. All right. If you're going on a holiday with a Formula One driver, dead or alive, who would you choose to go on a holiday with and why?
So I'm going to go with David Coulthard for this one. I was very fortunate a few years ago. So yes, I was invited to the paddock this year. We were invited to a dinner with Qatar Airways after qualifying day, and they had David actually came and gave a talk, and he was just, I remember him being so chill, and I'm thinking, okay, he can really deliver under pressure given all the wins that DC's had. He is just so calm in the head, because every time I go on holiday, there's something seems to go wrong that I have to deal with. So on my last holiday, I get to the check-in desk, my flight hasn't been ticketed properly. Having someone with me that is really good dealing with all these curveballs and being able to, you know, navigate their way around when something pops up you weren't expecting, I just think he would be fun to travel with. I'm not sure how good he'd be with, you know, travel planning and things. But if I just need someone calm, just to, you know, be level-headed, bring it through, get to where we want to be without, you know, too much chaos, I think DC would be fun.
And I reckon he's got a ton of brilliant stories because he was racing in that, you know, Schumacher era. Oh, good one. Oh, brilliant. Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Chris Chamberlain, for coming on Away We Go podcast and sharing all your wonderful insights. I feel like I could sit here for hours and just keep asking you more questions and more questions about points and loyalty and frequent flyer programs and booking free things. It's the dream for every traveler, right? And if you need help with that, obviously you can go and consult with Chris Chamberlain. Look out for his work in AFR, Australian Financial Review, as well as Traveller and Business Traveller and a bunch of other places. Follow him on social media as well. I'll put links to the show notes to all of that.
There's a great joy when you're boarding that plane, sitting in 1A, and you know you haven't paid full price, and you think around the cabin how much everyone else has spent. And it's the same thing if you use your points to go to the Grand Prix.
Wow, the dream, the dream. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. You can connect with us on socials. I've also recently launched a new Substack where I'm writing about Formula One destinations through a travel lens. So I'd love you to subscribe to that. Hello, if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. It really helps this small channel grow. Thank you so much for having us in your ears. Until next week, And until lights out. Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.